Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading today from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 13, entitled Grahugana Converses with Jadbhart. Tai Vanchita Hamsakulam Samadisan Arochayan Shilam Upaiti Vanaran Tat jati rasena sunirvrita indriya paraspara udvikshana vishmrita avadhi tarvanchito hamsakulam samadishan Arochayan Shilam Upaiti Vanaran Sajjati Rasena Sunivritendriyaha Parasparo Dvikshana Vishmitatvadhi Tarvanchito hamsakulam samadishan Arochayan shilam upaiti vanaran Tajjati rasena sunirvritendriya Parasparo dvikshana vishmitatvadi Tarvanchito hamsakulam samasvisan Arochayan shilam upaiti vanaran Tajjati rasena sunirvritendriya Parasparo dvikshana vishmitatvadhi Please chant. Vaishnavis, Tarvanchito hamsakulam samavisan Arochayan shilam upaiti vanaran Tajjati rasena sunirvritendriya Word meanings Thai by them, the cheaters and pretenders, the so-called yogis, swamis, incarnations, and gurus. Vanchitaha, being cheated. Hamsakulam, the association of great Paramahamsas, or devotees. Samavishan, contacting. Arochayan, not being satisfied. Shilam, with their behavior. Upaiti, approaches. Vanaran, the monkeys, which are all debauchees, with no good character. Tat jatirasena, by sense gratification, in the association of such debauchees. Sunirvrita indriyai, being very satisfied with getting the opportunity of sense gratification. Paraspara, of one another. Udvikshana, by seeing the faces. Vishmita, who has forgotten. Avadi, the end of life. Translation and later purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Being cheated by them, the living entity in the forest of the material world tries to give up the association of these so-called yogis, swamis, and incarnations and come to the association of real devotees. But due to misfortune, he cannot follow the instructions of the spiritual master or advanced devotees. Therefore, he gives up their company and again returns to the association of monkeys who are simply interested in sense gratification and women. He derives satisfaction by associating with sense gratifiers and enjoying sex and intoxication. In this way, he spoils his life simply by indulging in sex and intoxication. Looking into the faces of other sense gratifiers, he becomes forgetful and thus approaches death. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Sometimes a foolish person becomes disgusted with bad association and comes to the association of devotees and brahmanas and takes initiation from a spiritual master. As advised by the spiritual master, he tries to follow the regulative principles. But due to misfortune, he cannot follow the instructions of the spiritual master. He therefore gives up the company of devotees and goes to associate with simian people who are simply interested in sex and intoxication. I had somebody look it up yesterday. I never heard the word simian before. It means monkey-like. Monkey-like. Those who are so-called spiritualists are compared to monkeys. Outwardly, monkeys sometimes resemble sadhus because they live naked in the forest and they pick fruits. But their only desire is to keep many female monkeys and enjoy sex life. Sometimes so-called spiritualists seeking a spiritual life come to associate with Krishna conscious devotees, but they cannot execute the regulative principles or follow the path of spiritual life. Consequently, they leave the association of devotees and go to associate with sense gratifiers who are compared to monkeys. Again, they revive their sex and intoxication, and looking at one another's faces, they are thus satisfied. In this way, they pass their lives up to the point of death. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Om agyanatam yandesha anjana shalakaya. Chakshu umnitamina tasmaye shri gurave namaha. Shri titanam anobhishtam stapitam yena bhutale svayam rupa kadamayam dadati svapadantikam. Jaya shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda shri advaita giradhar shivasadi gaura bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So in the Sri Yasya Upanishad, it's explained that one should cultivate knowledge of both transcendence and nescience side by side. And we see in our studying every morning under Prabhupada's instruction and guidance that studying and reading the Bhagavatam is the full expression of this methodology. And that the Bhagavatam, many, many places, offers beautiful glorification and prayers and revelations of the Lord and His pastimes, and His intimate loving affairs with His devotees. Just like I live in Washington, D.C., we're reading the 10th canto. It's quite expansive. Sometimes it's quite hard for us to discuss. We just read and hear and hope to be purified and don't necessarily comprehend the exalted pastimes of the Lord. And there's other sections of the Bhagavatam where nescience is discussed a little bit more. And there's very elaborate expositions, condemnations in the material world. Various insights are given as to the dark, dreary, and dangerous nature of this world. Anyone want to guess which part we're reading now? This is Dravida's transcendental vision. He sees Leela in everything. And of course, ultimately, it's all Leela, because it's part of Krishna's pastime to bring us back to Godhead. So in that sense, it's Leela. But for those of us down here, it's not Leela. If you think it is, or those people that think it is, they've missed lesson one of Bhagavad Gita. So therefore, the Bhagavatam repeats lesson one of the Bhagavad Gita and elsewhere. The Bhagavatam here is fully manifesting the power of hearing from the great acharyas and exalted Paramahamsa devotees, and senior devotees through our parampara system, to really shine a light upon the nature of this material world, to expose it, all of its absurdities and the illusions of material life, the danger, and perhaps most important, the pain of this material life. We're all motivated to seek happiness. It's our nature. We want to avoid pain. And the Bhagavatam points out to us where the pain is coming from. And usually it's quite painful to hear where the pain is coming from, because we want those things without the pain. So therefore, sometimes it's painful to hear. We've all had that experience. You go sometimes on Harinam and people walk by, they cover their ears. No, I don't want to be purified. I don't want to hear about God. Or sometimes we offer someone a book. I've used to distribute books full-time many years ago, and I can remember many times offering someone a book. And if they don't know what it was, they were sometimes a little, maybe they're interested, maybe they're not. But there was a certain percentage of people that kind of knew what it was and wanted nothing to do with it at all. No, I don't want that book. Because they don't want to hear. They don't want to hear. Because they're very convinced. They're determined. As Prahlad Maharaj and others describe, they're determined, no matter what, to go on in their materialistic life. So Jadbhart, we're hearing from him here, and we know this whole story has been evolving for a couple chapters here. He came across the king, or the king came across him. He was pressed into the king's service, and instead, you know, he decided, elaborate story, but that he would take the opportunity to instruct the king. And of course, the king, by nature, kings are generally very materialistic persons, very absorbed in their money, in their power, their prestige, in their wives, in their armies, in controlling, conquering as much of the world as they possibly can. And we can see that with Maharaj Rahugana. When Jadbharat is stumbling and stepping in an awkward way, he immediately chastises him. He doesn't say, "Excuse me, is there a problem? Do you see something that I don't see? Am I not understanding things properly?" That would be a little bit more of a brahminical or a self-analytical response. He immediately goes to chastise him. "You better do this right or you're in big trouble." Doesn't he? A couple times he chastises him. So this is the problem with position of being the king or the enjoyer. And we can see in Lord Chaitanya's Leela with King Pratapurudra, he would try to, you know, avoid him, because it's too dangerous for a renounced person to be with a materialistic person. So Jadbhart here, although he hadn't spoken before, generally he was considered to be foolish and stupid and maybe even dumb that he couldn't speak, because he rarely, if ever, did. But now he's speaking with full force. It's kind of like, "Okay, King, here comes the mercy. I haven't given to anybody before. You think you're chastising me in my low position? Well, here it comes. Who's really low?" And he speaks to him rather bluntly. And obviously, Sukadev Goswami and the great Acharyas in our line, they've also felt it's a lesson for us to hear, or it would have maybe been pushed aside. So many great teachers in history have spoken to their disciples. Why is this particular story there? Because it's particularly significant to wake us up, to help us understand the nature of this materialistic life. And so far, there's been 16 verses where the dangers and the horrors of materialistic life have been exposed. It's been compared to a forest in rather blunt terms. Not necessarily the section you would want to read, at, like if you were invited to, say, speak in an event, basic principles of Krishna consciousness. I would request, as your humble servant in the communications ministry, don't go to this chapter as the first introduction to people to Krishna consciousness. It may be a lesson. It is a lesson that they need to learn at some point in time, but it may be hard for them to swallow. Just like, you know, most of the books, we distribute books like Chant. Prabhupada would say, chant, dance, and be happy. Right? Once you get a little taste for chanting, dancing, and be happy, then we read these things about what's holding us back from chanting, dancing, and be happy. Right? But first you got to be a little convinced about the need to chant, dance, and be happy and how nice it is. So yesterday we're reading about how the conditioned soul in this world, they take shelter of the king particularly, the living entity, the merchant that's gone into the forest, take shelter of their wife and sensual life, or, you know, if a woman takes shelter of the husband to provide all of her sensual needs, but that the living entity, because they're afraid of death, even they're very attracted to sense gratification, sometimes out of that fear, they take shelter of spiritual guides, and particularly discussed here, shelter of bogus leaders. And today's verse then goes on to explain a little more detail how they're cheated by those persons. They're not directed to the Supreme Lord, but they're told something else. And we can see this in Kali Yuga. So many people, so many books, so many philosophies, and they just teach people, you know, you're okay, just be a little more determined in your sense gratification. Or just chant a little mantra and have more sense gratification. Or just practice yoga to become stronger for your sense gratification, etc. So many different varieties are there. But then, as it's explained in the Bhagavatam, those same persons, because they do have some impetus for genuine spiritual experience, they become frustrated by those people that are not able to give them proper guidance, and they again return to materialistic life, and again, they spoil their lives by taking shelter in the material energy. And in the purport, Prabhupada gets even heavier in his analysis, because here Prabhupada describes that even sometimes persons may take shelter of a guru, a bona fide guru, but they're not able to follow that person, their spiritual master. They give up the association of those advanced personalities, and again, they return to materialistic life, taking shelter of sex, intoxication, sensual life in various ways, until they die. So I have to say, when I was reading this text ahead of time, you know, I was kind of like, I was looking around like, who's he talking about? Is it me? Is it you? Who's he talking about? And of course, generally our tendency is to think, I hope you're all listening to this. You need to listen to this. You are a danger. You are at risk. And of course, if we think like that, we miss the whole message. Because as teachers and preachers, it is that we should understand everyone is at risk, but primarily we should understand this message is meant for me. Just as Prabhupada would say, okay, you're selling my books, but are you reading my books? Same way we could say, you're preaching the philosophy, are you applying the philosophy? You're hearing the condemnation of the material world, are you taking that into our own hearts? Because as Prabhupada said, first you should save yourself. First priority to save ourselves. So when we hear, we should also, as the first priority, try to see what is this saying to us. So as I was reading this, I was thinking it comes to mind like three primary messages here. The first one, again and again and again and again and again. Sometimes you can hear your false ego going, all right already. I got the message, but we really didn't. I got the message, or did I get the message? There's no satisfaction in the material world. That's the first message. Prabhupada says in a few purports mixed in here, He says, it's not that there's no happiness in the material world. Sometimes we read this, we think we're probably saying there's no happiness, but I get happiness. When the sun comes out and it stops raining, there's a little bit of happiness. And when there's hunger and I feed my stomach, there's a little bit of happiness. But he explains it's like a drop of water. He says the quality, it is water, there is some happiness there, but it's a drop, it's just not sufficient. And generally materialistic people, they don't want to admit that it's not sufficient. Because the false ego is all about, I am sufficient, isn't it? I don't need Krishna, I don't need anything else, I am sufficient. So if someone comes up and says, but, you know, you're not really happy, what are you talking about? Me? Not happy? We've all had experiences like this, and I've told this story, I think maybe be here before, meeting a person on book distribution with a broken arm and his eyes were all damaged, and he obviously had some horrible accident. And I tried to approach him. I assumed he'd want to take the book. And he was the most resistant person I remember ever talking to. And I was thinking, how many more messages do you have to get before you realize that, you know, there's no happiness in this material world? So again and again, the Bhagavatam is giving this message. Again and again, the Guru, the advanced devotees give us this message. Life gives us this message that we really can't be happy. There's not enough happiness in this material world. But why is it so hard for us to understand that? Why do we continue going on? Why do we continue going on chewing the chewed? In part because it's the core of our false ego. It's the core of our rebelliousness. I must be able to enjoy this matter, because if I can't, then I'm not in control. There's some other controller other than me. If I can't enjoy matter, then it means maybe I'm not the enjoyer. Maybe there is a higher personality than me, than I'm meant to surrender to. Maybe I'm not the master. If I can't enjoy this, if I can't control it, then maybe I'm not the master. And that's a hard message to hear, because that's why we came here. At the root of our materialistic consciousness, the first layer covering our real identity is this false ego thinking that I'm the master. So it's hard for us to get that message. Therefore, the Bhagavatam repeatedly tells us, and we have to be ready to repeatedly hear the message about the nature of this materialistic life, materialistic consciousness, ready to practice devotional service and to be purified. And also, always, that we have to remember through this primary message that there's no real happiness here, that the ups and downs of life that we all experience, you know, sometimes we become devotees and we think, you know, by the time we get initiated, or maybe second initiation, or maybe our fifth anniversary, or tenth anniversary, that life will just be, like they say, a bed of roses. But it's not. At every stage, you know, whether a new bhakta, you got to deal with your ego, and you have to deal with envy, and anger, and lust, and greed, etc. And when you're initiated, and second initiated, and the temple president, and a sannyasi, and a guru, and whatever, you still got to fight the same problems are still there. But those lessons we should try to always remember, as explained by the acharyas, and we should try to have some faith in this. It's a little hard sometimes. Those lessons are actually good for us. The ups and the downs are there to help us to reflect upon our position. What does it mean? Why am I going through this experience? What am I meant to learn from this? What can I learn from this? What does this mean about my misconceptions of spiritual life? What is this problem I'm experiencing? What is it telling me about what I need to do better and how I can learn and how I can practice my spiritual life in a more sincere heart? Whether it's pain, whether it's joy, whether it's disease, whether it's old age, whether it's poverty, whether it's dishonor or honor, all these things are meant to teach us. So that's the first lesson I pull from this. I have to become convinced there's no happiness in this material life. Second thing, as Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita and his purports and elsewhere, there's danger even on the royal road. We should remember that. And therefore be careful to execute our devotional service very attentively. Prabhupada gave that example. We've all used that in our teachings. That spiritual life is like a razor's edge. And not that we think, okay, you know, now I'm initiated, I can take it easy. You know, and now I have a spiritual name. Now it's okay. Or not that we think, now I'm in the Dham, it's okay. I'm protected. I can come and live in the Dham and everything's okay. Because not many people get to live in the Dham. So obviously I'm very special. We shouldn't think like that. And we definitely are, or we shouldn't think, okay, now I'm married, take shelter, grihastha life. That's also described as a fortress. So now I'm safe, now I'm protected, now I'm okay. I don't have to worry. No, there's danger at every step. We shouldn't think, oh, I'm a brahmachari, wear saffron, isn't it? Like in India, wear saffron. America, people think, what are you, a stoplight? What's wrong? What are you wearing these funny clothes? But in India, so much respect, isn't it? You wear saffron, there's so much respect comes. But we shouldn't think, okay, now I have some saffron cloth, now I'm okay. We should be careful that there's danger at every step. And here as it's described, or we shouldn't think, okay, I'm the temple president, whatever it is, I'm the temple president, I'm okay. So much prestige, authority, I don't have to be careful anymore. No, you have to be more careful. More careful, because if you're not careful, you can make more trouble to yourself and to others. So as we kind of like have more and more responsibility or position or so-called status, we have to be more and more careful in our spiritual practice. And here we see that sometimes living entities, they take shelter even of a bona fide spiritual master. But if they're not careful, they may again fall back into materialistic consciousness. And of course, we've all seen this. Every year, locally, nationally, globally, someone who'd taken up the path very seriously, or many people who've taken up the devotional path, they become a little careless, a little inattentive, and at least temporarily, they're again swept away by the material desires. It's not a surprise. Prabhupada says we shouldn't be surprised who leaves Krishna consciousness, we should be surprised who stays. Because as he said, it's like a war against Maya. And when there's war, there's going to be a lot of casualties. But understanding you're going to war, you got to be a little careful. It's not that you think, okay, I'm going to war, and there'll be casualties, so, you know, que sera, sera, whatever happens, it happens. No, you have to be careful. You have to protect yourself. You have to keep good association. You have to be thoughtful, not inattentive, etc. So, second lesson there, that we should always be careful. Always associate carefully with devotees. Do not allow ourselves to become isolated physically, emotionally, intellectually, spiritually, devotionally from peers and elders. We all need that, every one of us. Third lesson, also described in the Isha Upanishads, we all tend to be cheated in this material world. So many stories. We've all been cheated so many times. Just trying to get from Calcutta to Mayapur, you better watch it. Isn't it? Be very, very careful. You know, every morning, somebody lost this. Somebody left this. Somebody was stolen. This was stolen. That was stolen. You know, even in the Dham, we have to be careful. There's a tendency to be cheated here. And we tend to be cheated by people. We tend to be cheated by institutions. I was talking with some Vaishnavis, some book distributors yesterday from Africa, and they were telling me when they go in the streets of Nairobi, because I was talking to them about cultivating government leaders, they said, no, we really don't want to do that. I said, why? They said, we meet them on the streets and they ask us for a bribe in the middle of the street. So, you know, Prabhupada talks about rogues and thieves in the garb of government leaders. He said, they come by and say, you know, you should buy me some tea. And they said, tea is very expensive. You know, just meet him on the road. You know, you should buy me some tea. What to speak of, so many ways we're cheated by other people. But also, and perhaps an even more subtopic here, that we tend to be cheated. What's the other half of it? We tend to cheat. We also have that tendency. We shouldn't think, you know, again, oh, they're talking about him and her and her and him and him and him. It was about me. I have the tendency to cheat. In the same way I should be careful that I'm not cheated, possibly you could argue I have to be even more careful that I'm not a cheater. Because if I'm cheated by somebody else, that's my karma, to suffer in that way. If I cheat, I'm simply increasing my karma. Whoever may be victimized by me, but what is the result of the karma effect upon me? And we all have a very sacred task. We're here at the lotus feet of Shri Shri Radha Madhava and Srila Prabhupada and Lord Nrisinghadev and Panchatattva. Very, very fortunate, somehow or other, by the causeless mercy of our predecessor acharyas and the Vaishnavas that have helped us in so many ways. So we have this sacred task to become Krishna conscious, and also, as Prabhupada begged us, requested us, advised us, ordered us, begged us, Please help others become Krishna conscious. Please preach, as he said, just like I am doing. So as described in the Shastra, we shouldn't become a father, we shouldn't become a mother, we shouldn't become a guru, we shouldn't become a teacher, if we can't deliver those that are dependent upon us. So in the same way, Prabhupada advised, there's one lecture I heard where Prabhupada was giving second initiation, or he was talking about brahminical life, and he was speaking very strongly. He said, don't become a Brahmin and then fall or violate the honor, the obligations of that position. He said, if you do, it'll ruin everything. Spoke like that, it'll ruin everything. So as time goes by and our movement grows, and we can see, those of you that live here, you see all the devotees coming from around the world, and it increases every year. Those of us that visit periodically, it seems every time we come, it's growing. We see the TOVP, the beautiful temple, is growing, and it's almost like the number of languages you hear. If you really knew a lot of languages, the number of languages is increasing, and the number of seminars is increasing, and the number of Sankirtan parties is increasing, and books are increasing in so many parts of the world, etc. So our movement is growing, it will continue to grow, and as it does, people will pay more and more attention to us. You know, in the beginning they kind of think you're a little strange and they don't pay much attention. But gradually we know, especially in the years to come when the temple opens, and so many temples are opening in other parts of the world, and so many books are being translated in different languages, more and more and more people, they're starting to give us some serious attention. Not so much yet, but they're starting to. In a couple of years, 2016, we'll be celebrating a very important event. What is that event?
50th anniversary.
ISKCON's 50th anniversary. That's a very, very big deal. And if we all join together and make that an emphasis along with the other services we have, we're going to be getting a lot of attention from the governments and the media, from religious leaders. They're going to look at us more and more. And they're going to expect more and more from us. So we should be careful to think and to look and to do everything we can. Will we be up to the task of showing them an example and of representing Srila Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya? That's not a cheap thing. Sometimes we think, well, I'm a follower, let them do it. Like you're like in the wake of a boat. You're just a raft gets pulled along by the wake. But that's not really what it means to follower. A follower means we have to represent. We have to take the mission upon ourselves, according to our own small capacity. We have to take responsibility and we have to be a representative. People look at us to see what's the nature of your guru? They just study the disciples, isn't it? I read a little something the other day. It said, if it's hard to discern the quality or the character of a man, look at his friends. That's quite wise. So Prabhupada is not physically present. Many people, of course, read his books, but they basically see him through the people that claim to be his followers. So we have to ask ourselves and be careful, how well am I reflecting or giving an example or representing Srila Prabhupada? And just like here in this verse is describing that people need shelter, but they're often misguided. So we should pray while we're here in the Dham. We all come here to get inspired, those of us that are visiting and those of us who are here are very important ourselves to set a very nice example, that we don't want to misguide or let others down. A very, very important responsibility we have. It's actually great violence. If someone comes to the temple or we give someone shelter, we have a home program, a namahata or bhakta vriksha, people are coming to our house, that's a great responsibility. If we're a devotee, if we've been in the temple for 1 week and a new person comes, they look up to us to set an example. That's a great, great responsibility. So how do we avoid that, not cheating, not misguiding? Main thing, we always have to remember we're servants, not that we're the master. We have to remember that if I'm the bhakta leader, what is that? What's the definition of a bhakta leader? It means servant of the bhaktas. What's the definition of a temple president? It means servant of the temple. Or if you're the community president, that means servant of the community. And allow me to just give a small example for some, whatever. You know, the GBC has its structures and has to go through various responsibilities every year. So this year I was asked to serve in the capacity of a chairman. And I was, of course, I was thinking, I don't know if I can do this. I have to because I was asked, I don't know how I can do that. I was saying, Krishna, how do I do this? And then he gave me a little insight. I was saying, and actually, this is very fortunate, because when I'm in Washington, I get to be the servant of the devotees in Washington. And when I travel in my ministry, my service to Prabhupada doing communications, I get to kind of serve the communications devotees and the other devotees. And then I was thinking about, you know, this small, not such important title, but whatever it is, chairman, I was thinking, wow, what mercy. Because that means I'm serving the Russian devotees and the Indian devotees and the German devotees and the men devotees and the lady devotees and the senior devotees and the junior devotees. And, you know, I can try to do that. I just have to serve everybody. And if I do that, then I may fail in different responsibilities that are there. But at least if I can try. So that's what I should try to do for this next year. So remember that. Not that we think I'm a devotee, and we sometimes think like this. I'm a devotee, therefore I can do whatever I want. If I mistreat someone, I'm the temple president. Respect me. I'm a sannyasi. You have to do what I say. I'm a Prabhupada disciple. Move over. What does it mean to be a Prabhupada disciple? It should mean we've had more years to practice being a servant. That's what it means. And if we haven't understood that, not much credit to say I'm a Prabhupada disciple. It's kind of like, I'm a disciple, but I'm not very disciplined. You know, I'm a temple president, but I haven't really understood what the position means. I'm a renunciate, but maybe I'm not so renounced yet. So of course, I'm, you know, myself, I'm speaking to myself first and foremost. And we can, you know, the idea is it doesn't matter what our situation is, it's based on being a servant. So these are 3 points I would request we try to take away from this wonderful verse and wonderful description. First, there's no happiness in this material world. It's like a forest fire. And all those things that seem to give us shelter, they really don't. Unless Krishna's at the center. If Krishna's at the center, the same things that were dangerous for materialistic consciousness become sources of inspiration and shelter for us. But we should be careful. Second point, that there's danger at every step. You always be careful. And the third point here, that we should pray and beg, please, Prabhupada, let us represent you properly. Please, Guru Maharaj, let me represent you properly. Please let me not try to cheat. Let me not ever try to enjoy my position, my title, my power, my influence. But let me understand that the first quality of being a Vaishnava, whether I'm a one-year devotee or a 101-year devotee, is to be a servant of others. And in that way, if I can do that, then I can avoid this forest fire, I can help as many people as possible get out of this forest fire, and I can represent a little bit the wonder and the beauty and the knowledge and the mercy that's coming out through the parampara, and I can be an instrument in the hands of my spiritual master to help spread Krishna consciousness more and more and more around the world, working cooperatively as Srila Prabhupada asked us to, and sharing the mercy of Lord Chaitanya with everyone we meet. And seeing that in 2016 it's a glorious celebration, and when this temple opening it's a glorious celebration, and actually every single day we get to live in this world and serve Krishna is a glorious celebration. So I'll stop there. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So somehow I very strategically put the harmonium over the sign that tells me the time. Is it quit at 8:45 sharp pukka questions and everything, or question or two? I honestly don't know. Question or two is okay? Sorry. Okay. Any questions? Comments? Haribo. Here and then here. Yes, Prabhu. I don't think the mic's working.
How'd it go?
Yes.
In this verse, you first pointed out, of course, it's how this section of Srimad Bhagavatam repeats again and again how the material world is not a place of happiness.
Yes.
And sense gratification never leads to happiness. So I want to ask the question, why is it we hear this knowledge all over and over again, and we may even be in a very renounced position in life, chanting and hearing and have withdrawn completely from sense gratification. But what is it that, why is it that we always, there's something inside of us that always hopes.
That always
hopes.
Hopes. Hope yeah. against hope.
Yeah, in other words, what is it, how do you give up that hope? That's hope that someday the material world is going to turn around in such a way and it will be a wonderful, enjoyable place for you.
Yeah. Well, one comment I'll make, it's a nice question, one comment I'll make is that what you just said shows why Krishna needs to continually allow us to suffer some in this life. Because there's that other side, isn't it? Krishna, why me? I'm chanting your name, I'm devotee, whatever you gave me, I use in your service, why do you have to take it away? Because maybe there's a little thought still there that, actually, I could kind of enjoy this. And we know, of course, there's whole planetary systems for living entities that want to enjoy like anything, recognize Krishna's there, but also still enjoy like anything. Is it? But we don't want to be demigods. We don't want to go through that process. Maybe we've been through that process a few times. So, I mean, the hope against hope, you know, you can have a whole conversation, but as I understand it, it gets back to that false ego that's very, 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 very subtle. It's like the first covering. So we're cleaning, 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 but there's still that root until we're completely purified that's there. And also in part because we're marginal energy, we're still influenced by the material energy. So in a few verses from now, it's quite interesting. There's one purport which describes that Jad Bharat, even after this whole exchange, he still, his mind was feeling some envy or anger or something towards the king. And it describes, he just let it go. Which I thought was very interesting. Such an exalted soul, but it still gave me a sense, you know, sometimes we kind of condemn ourselves. Why is it I've been chanting for so long and I still have this desire? It's just the material energy. We have to just let it go. Try not to act on it, just let it go. It's not like because the desire is there, forget it, finished, you're a dog, etc. No, I'm a jiva. I'm in the material world, I'm trying my best. Krishna, please protect me. It's okay? And we'll take one from here and then we'll end.
If Krishna consciousness is...
It's on, but just talk right here, please.
If Krishna consciousness gives higher taste and association with devotees, association with the sadhus gives higher taste, why, as it is stated in this verse, some of those who got such association leave it? Didn't they... get this higher taste or somehow this lower taste of material life is better for them?
Yeah, if these person described in the verse that they got the higher taste, why do they go away for the lower taste? Yeah, it's a great question. A lot of different ways that could be answered. In part, unless you're all experiencing something a lot different than I am, the higher taste is a gradual process. It's not like you walk in the door and, okay, spiritual ecstasy and, you know, spit at the thought of all the sense gratification. It's not like that. And why is that? Because Krishna gave us free will. He's still giving us the choice. You know, do you want spiritual life or do you want him? Okay, I'm suffering like anything. Okay, here's a little taste. Maybe there's something else. And Prabhupada says sometimes, other purpose, he says sometimes people come, they get a little relief from their misery and they go away. They really didn't want Krishna. They just wanted relief from the misery. So Krishna's always given us this opportunity. Maya, of course, she's always tempting us. Material energy is always tempting us with so many different things. So it's a gradual process of experiencing that higher taste. And the lower taste doesn't completely go away as long as we don't want it to be there. We're still, as he was mentioning, you know, we're still kind of like, well, maybe I could enjoy. Maybe I should enjoy. And then Krishna says, okay, you know, you want to enjoy. Here's, how about a car accident? How's that? How about a lawsuit? Would you like a lawsuit? Let's send you a lawsuit. Or here's a, you know, why don't we just get you, put you sick on your bed for a week and a half? Are you enjoying now? Etc. So these are all ways that Krishna is trying to help us. And the higher taste, you know, it's a gradual thing. When I first came here years ago, I remember sitting in the bank of the Ganges where the sannyasi was talking about such a great higher taste, and I was thinking, I'm sitting, I'm hungry, my stomach's all in shreds, it's, you know, sunburned, and you know, I don't have mosquito stuff, and I'm sleeping on the roof, and it's like I want to go home to my mother, and where's the higher taste? I can remember thinking, you know, where's the higher taste? So, you know, Krishna, I think we all experience, he gives, it's almost like we said to Krishna, go away, isn't it? Go away, I want my own world, I want my own universe, please God, go away. But he's kind of like behind the pillar going, yeah, I'm still here if you want me. Do you want me? Well, no, go away. And then sometimes you go, Krishna, please help me. That little story Prabhupada tells, the old woman, she's carrying the bundle on her shoulder. She slips and falls and drops the bundle. She prays, dear God, please help, please help, please help. She's so sincere, and he shows up. What would you like? Oh, thank you for coming. Can you please put the bundle back on my head? Right? So please, God, help me, help me, help me. But that desire has to become more pure. And when it's really pure, then the taste gradually manifests. But also, we should be careful. We should be a little thoughtful. Because there's a taste just in living with people that get up in the morning and for fun want to go to the temple and praise God. Wow, that's beautiful. You know, live with people that in the morning before they go to work into the rat race, they like to sit down and just talk philosophy. How do I become a better person? How do I purify my heart? How do I minimize the violence I cause to the world and to other people? Wow, that's wonderful. And then they sit, and before they eat anything, they offer in a spirit of appreciation to the divine. And they try to minimize the violence of everything they eat, etc., 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 etc. Even these kind of, we start taking for granted. These are wonderful things. Those are also higher taste. We may not be so pure to really relish them, but at least in our minds, our hearts, and our intelligence, we should try to recognize how fortunate we are. You know, like they say, the simple pleasures in life are the most important. So reflecting and thinking about that and appreciating that, you know, that you've got, you know, girlfriends and other people that really care about you or care about each of us and want to help us understand God. And, you know, they'll say to us, hey, you know, you're getting off now. You need to work on this. You need to work on that. Most people don't have that. Their friends are all about competition, climbing to the top. And if they can use you, they will, and then they'll kick you in the face. Generally. Not everybody's so nasty, but, you know, the tendency is there. But to live with people who are trying to give up that tendency, that's very fortunate. That's a higher taste. Okay? Thank you all very, very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Thank you.